हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So what then is the ultimate truth? The answer is that non-dual knowledge is the ultimate truth. It is devoid of the contamination of material qualities. It gives us liberation. It is the one without a second, all-pervading and beyond imagination. The first realization of that knowledge is Brahman, then Paramatma, the Supersoul, is realized by the yogis who try to see him without grievance. This is the second stage of realization. Finally, full realization of the same supreme knowledge is realized in the Supreme Person. All learned scholars describe the Supreme Person as Vasudeva, the cause of Brahman, Paramatma, and others. Footnote 19. Right, so here is that one is... Krishna is non-dual, so he is everything, but you understand him in these three features. So Brahman is there, then Paramatma, and then that through that meditational process. We see is that the Vaishnav line, basically you give Bhagavan first, and then you work back from there. You know, so that's the uniqueness of it. That's why it's called the quick path. Because this other path where you go up through is very slow, can take many, many lifetimes. Like that. So, yes?
Would this be the difference between ascending and descending?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, because the descending, then you'd start from there and then come down. Because if you understand Bhagavan, you actually understand Brahman and Paramatma. Because that's the more difficult one. But at the same time, that's the original and more essential. Well, if you go up through all these different processes of religion, like that, but if it's done in devotion, then you go up through it that way. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah, so here then the proper way is that you're going up. You're starting from Bhagavan and coming down. That makes it so much easier. Like that, yes.
But it seems like that it's not to... Sometimes you can have a sentimental approach to Bhagavan.
That's there, but the point is that at least it's sentiments towards Bhagavan. As Narad Muni points out in the seventh canto, that the Lord's so glorious that any way you approach him, then you get benefits. So even those in envy or, you know, jealousy, all these different things, they still get benefit because it's connected to him. Because that's the whole point, is the soul is connected, because if you have a non-dual substance, right? So that means that non-dual is everything. So that means we're supposed to be functioning in a normal way, right? You know what I'm saying? It's not normal if you want to do one thing and your arm does something else. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is we should be doing what we do. But he being independent, then he still functions, even though we may not be functioning so well. You know? So then we add to that already perfection that he has. But the point is we're already non-different. But at the same time is there's the unlimited variety, there's difference. But the point is this is one thing. That's why when you see it in that way, then you're able to. So it's just like you start from Shabda, then Anuman, then Pratyaksha. So when you get to Pratyaksha, that means you've realized. So the same way we start with Bhagavan, it may be sentimental. But then with time we start to see, yes, you have to follow all the rules and regulations in connection with Bhagavan. It's his laws, right? Then it becomes, you know, less sentimental, more... Then you start to see how he's in everything and how everything's connected to him, right? So then the difference being is that we're not going up through Brahman simply, you know, ending with the impersonal and then gradually getting to Paramatma, and then gradually getting to it. You're starting with Bhagavan, so then when you're dealing with Bhagavan, then it's just expanding, so you understand more of the detail of Bhagavan. Does that make sense? So, from the ascending process, then the position of understanding Brahman is lower than Paramatma, is lower than Bhagavan. Now, so Bhagavan's the highest. Now, within Bhagavan, now if you can accommodate Paramatma and Brahman and still not get distracted. Now, you can accommodate those, but it distracts you from your main relationship with the Lord because of the aspect of grandeur and all those things, right? But then the highest will be that you're not disturbed. You can see all three as the same one person. That's the non-dual. We're used to non-dual meaning it's impersonal. Here, non-dual means everything's personal. Does that make sense? You know, so you're dealing, let's say, with your, you know, recording machine here. But because it's Krishna, you know, it's not the form of Krishna in the way that he's performing pastimes with his devotees. But the point is it is Krishna, so you want to deal with it appropriately for its position. You know, without karma or jnana. So what is the purpose of this? How it can be engaged in his service? And then therefore then you'll follow that. Does that make sense? So that means all these aspects you can see. And it's all Krishna. So it all reminds you of Krishna. For others, this will remind you of you know, from Baladev on down. Right? So in other words, the Kriya and Jnana Shaktis, you see all in relationship or support of each other. Does that make sense? And you don't get distracted from that position of service, you know, that you once trying to please Krishna. So he sees that it's interesting, even though it's the lowest, it's when it's added, it means only those on the highest platform can add it and not have it affect their particular devotion. Does that make sense? So that's the interesting thing, because you see is that it's there all along. This non-dual substance is always mentioned. Right? First and second cantos make that very, very clear, especially second canto. So the fundamentals of philosophy and all that are there. And you see it's mentioned all throughout, but it becomes more of a prominent point as you get into the, you know, ninth canto, and then specifically in tenth, it's regularly discussed. And then you see it in the nature when Krishna is talking to the gopis. His message to the gopis is this aspect. Right? Because by seeing that, then you can at any point always remind you of Krishna. But what's the difference? Why is it only that the Braj Basis, and specifically the gopis, then can deal with this very nicely? It's because when you see him in everything, but it's not his original form, then it's non-different from him, but not being the original form, it will give the feeling of separation. You understand? So therefore, only the Gaudiya can actually appreciate this on that level. All the others, the philosophy is fine, but there won't be any emphasis there. But it's because then everything being Krishna, that means everything reminds you of Krishna. But at the same time, it gives the experience of separation because it's not his original form. Does that make sense? Because the original form is the threefold bending form. But from him expands everything, so therefore everything is him. You know, it's just like, okay, we go into a house and we sort of see some shoes and we see a toy on the floor, we see this or that, and for us it's just shoes and a toy and this and that. But for the mother, what is it? It's her son, her child. Shoes remind her of the child, the toy reminds her of the child, that there's a mess over in the corner, it's the child. You know what I'm saying? So everything's nice. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point, is when it's all seen in connection with, it just increases the affection. So for the Braj Basis, it's just a natural thing, so it's not as such Brahman realization. It's just realizing how Krishna has this aspect. Right? But it's not that it's an intellectual thing that where there's it's two things. It's actually non-dual. It's one. Does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore then it goes by, it adds so much to, but only on that platform. Because what's wrong with the other platform, the other approach? What does Brahman mean? What's the situation? How is one situated if one has Brahman realization? One is liberated, right? So that's the whole point. And so that will be the situation that one experience, one gains from that Brahman realization by coming up through. And so that can be an impediment, because then one can still see that within the context of the benefits you get. But if that's not emphasized, and it's just the Bhagavan aspect, because that being the core and that being the actual totality, and within that, then it says that here, describe the Supreme Person as Vasudeva, the cause of Brahman and Paramatma and others. And others means all his expansions, his internal potency, Vishnumurtis, the jivas, everything. So, it's Bhagavan. So then the Brahman aspect just adds detail to the Bhagavan aspect. So Paramatma and Brahman add to the flavor of, instead of having their own flavor. So it never creates an idea of liberation. It always, it just adds to the personal relationship. Mm-hmm. Is that what I'm saying? So that's the point, is that it doesn't disturb that affection for the Supreme Person. While the other one, it can be a stumbling block. And someone can be satisfied and just stop there. Is that make sense? Like, because the Kumaras, they were on that platform, not devotees. Then they came in contact with the Lord. Then they were on that same platform that now is devotees. Right? So they're always, instead of just being absorbed in Brahman, now they're absorbed in the Lord. But the place where they're situated is the same. So that's why you don't want to make that prominent. You know, then it's just a matter of you start with the top, so it comes down. So then it means when you get down to the senses, seeing what I know with what I've heard from Shastra, with my senses, I can perceive it. That's Shastra Chakshus. So in other words, here, then in this case, you know, just according to your phrase, that would be Bhagavan Chakshus. Seeing everything as Bhagavan. But it's not the impersonal everything is Bhagavan, because it means it's always the person. Because we say everything that we all mean, it's all one, it means it's impersonal. Here it's no, everything is all one. It's Krishna, the person. But at the same time, it's non-different, because all these are, he's the cause of these, so he's the basis. So that's the point. That's the amazing thing about his non-dualness. He's non-dual, but there's variety. You know what I'm saying? Because the actual not so developed is there's non-dual and there's no variety, right? But that we understand is not actually the Vedic, because even like Sukadeva Goswami or the Kumaras, they can tell what's what. They know who's Vishnu and who are the doorkeepers and who's what, what's the door, right? So the doorkeepers are keeping them from going through the door, and then Lord Vishnu comes. So they're on the Brahman platform, but they can understand the variety. But it's not that one variety is more important than another. It's all Brahman. So it has equal weight. Only then they find out, no, Vishnu being, you know, then they add in from that platform of the Bhagavan. And, you know what I'm saying? So we're all good on this? Yes.
Maharaj, even while introducing Bhagavan as full aspects to the variety, it becomes difficult. So Jiva Goswami takes this path that first he explains like Brahman with form. Like, I mean, in the Bhakti Sandarbha, he explains on the form of the Lord.
Okay.
Then he explains Brahman is, how Brahman is dependent on the form. Krishna with form. Then in Paramatma Sandarbha, he explains Paramatma aspects and the Jiva, how he is related. Mm-hmm. And then in the next Krishna Sandarbha, he explains details on the variety aspect, that how is Krishna to Bhagavan, so in that particular statement.
Okay.
And all the 24. So because variegatedness is more difficult to understand, so in the beginning it kept only the form.
It's simple, but still it's form. So there is that, yeah. You're accepting that principle. You could also look at it from you're categorizing according to Dasa Mool. Mm-hmm. You're starting with him as the supreme. Mm-hmm. So as the supreme means he's all pervading, he's everything and everything like that. And so that would have that aspect, whereas the person who's that. Then the next one is that he's the lord of all his energies. Yeah. You know, he has unlimited energies. That would bring the Paramatma aspect in that he's controlling all these energies. Mm-hmm. Then, appreciating that, then you can get to he's rasa, which means then Bhagavan interacting with his devotees. You know what I'm saying? So it's not different from our philosophy or the definition that Lord Chaitanya gives in Dasa Mool. Mm-hmm. It's just taking that flavor in presenting that same thing. So it's just a different flavor, but it's not any different than, you know, because when we start from Shastra, so that would be first he also, from yeah. Tattva Sundarva. Then he's starting from just going through the so by the looks of it, it's just explaining Dasa Mool. So that he's using Dasa Mool as the framework, as the thematic study of the Bhagavata. And then within that, then how each one of those, how Shastra develops, how him as the supreme develops, how all these things. Okay. Yeah, very nice. Thank
you. He gives the three, that Rupa, Guna, and then Vibhuti. That the three aspects that are emphasized in this three.
Yeah, well, it's like you have name, form, qualities, pastimes. That's how it unfolds, is that it's like, and there's different levels. It's like you hear the name, you remember the form, you meditate on the qualities, you become absorbed in the pastimes. So you can see as the whole process starts getting deeper. Does that make sense? So that's why it's like we go to, try to remember the pastimes. But the point is you can do that for that moment, but it won't be consistent. Because pastimes need absorption, not remembering. You understand? So there's the hierarchy there, even of that whole process. So it's just like in the Smaranadasa. Is that you're going through the, what is it? How does it do it? There's one where you go through. Sorry? No. Within Smarana. It means you have Samadhi, you have Dhyan, you have Dharana, and I can't remember what he uses for the first two. You know, if that's Smriti on a Smriti or Dhruvana Smriti or something like that. There's some terms. So he also then equates those with these levels of name, form, qualities, pastimes. Like this. Does that make sense? It brings it all up like that. So it's so simple. You can present it so simply, but each one of those has so much. So he presents that thing that, for those who know, includes everything, but by the wording and the context, those who don't will gain something. You know, it's like when you read Prabhupada's purports, then if you're a neophyte, you'll catch one thing. If you're a Madhyama, you'll catch something more. If you're an Uttama, you'll catch even more. So every time you read it, you'll catch more. They will think, I read that, it was simple and all that. But unless you go back and read it, that's why it says you should read three times. Like that, because then you start to see. Does that make sense? So then it's just a matter of, it's a technique. You see, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also gives that technique in preaching, is to use those terminologies and that for us work for our understanding, but at the same time they work as a bridge for everybody else's understanding. Does that make sense? So then let's say, just as an example, as a context, the modern thing of, you know, everything's equal. You want to give equal weight to anything. You know, someone's rich or poor, or from, you know, educated or not, or from, you know, good standing or not, or anything. Whatever their position, it's all considered equal. They all have an equal chance. So we can take that point about equality, but we'll discuss it on the principle of that, since everything's connected to the Lord. and everybody therefore a servant of the Lord on that platform, and that's where the equality is. Right? But there's a distinction, is that you can't, everybody has to do something different. You can't all be doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, where's the individuality? Right? So that's the point, is that the concept, how we're approaching it, is that equality is there, but individuality remains. While the modern equality is there, individuality is lost. Mm-hmm. Though it's they're professing it's all about the individual. Right, so when they say no, then we bring that out. In other words, anything that anybody considers of value is all coming from Krishna. It's all coming from the Veda. But point is we'll discuss it from our terms. You know, the real terms. But you put it in the context of examples that they can understand it in their environment. Because it's not that there's something else. Oh, they have their thing and we have our thing. No, we have our thing and they're using part of our thing. Right? So it's not us. It's that Krishna being everything. It's all His. And so they, according to their conditioning and realization, then they catch a part of this. So there's nothing we can't discuss. That's the point. We have no dogma. Right? You know, you just have to use proper etiquette and all that. You can't say in the name of truth I can be badly behaved. Is that yeah. Is that good? Yeah. Okay. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur confirms that bhakti is beyond the gunas and is a medium to exchange false material objects, engage false material objects in the service of the Lord to attain the absolute truth. Right? Does that make sense? So bhakti is beyond. You're using the whatever it is that you have within the conditioned field of activities, but it's only a medium for pure service. Right? Then what is truth? The previously mentioned truth, tattva, is said to be that which is known by the authority of the scriptures. Right? So that's it. Unless it's known by scriptures, it's not actually truth. So that's why the problem comes here, is that they're accepting something that's not supported by scriptures as truth. Right? They have a philosophy and they stick to their philosophy, even if Shastra shows them wrong. So that's how you know when someone actually wants to know or they don't. So even they have this improper understanding, but you have to present the proper, and if they're actually serious, then they'll move forward. You know, it's just like Prakashananda Saraswati. Now, there's a Mayavadi, right? And, you know, 10,000 sannyas disciples. You have to be good to do that. And you're in Varanasi. That means you have to be a really good scholar in Vedanta. And, you know, better than all 10,000. You know, you're good. But as soon as he hears from Lord Chaitanya, then he moves forward. Is that the definition? He wants to know, so he moves forward. Right? Or then you have Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, even a bigger Mayavadi, you know, like, you know, as big as you can get, you know, except for Shankaracharya, he's next, right, you know. And Shankaracharya was just doing it as a service, so he wasn't actually a Mayavadi. So in that way you could say, Sarvabhauma, he was the Mayavadi, you know. But, you know, devotees say, oh, I'm the most fallen. And Prabhupada said, you're not the most anything, you know, like that. That's us. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was the most Mayavadi. Okay? But the point is he's trying to find the absolute truth. So when he comes into contact and hears the Vedanta Sutra explanations from Lord Chaitanya, then he applies that. That's sincere. But when you give the Shastra and then the doubt comes up in the Shastra or authority to maintain your philosophy, that means there's a lack of sincerity. That's where the weakness is. Does that make sense? So that one is weak, that there is the, what do you call it? Hridai Darbalya, that there's weakness of heart, or Asat Krishna, that we have attachment for the mundane. That's there. That's why we're in the material world, and that's why we've come to Krishna consciousness, because we, you know, are kind of tired of it. It's not working out so great. But we're used to it and all that. So, but we accept the higher principle. Does that make sense? We accept that. Therefore, then, trying to move forward, that brings us to the stage of, what do you call it? War with Maya. Right? Because before that is, well, you know, we could do this way and that way. Shastra supports both and this and that. And does that make sense? You know, so one sees that aspect, but then the point is no, you have to move forward to committing yourself to that, giving these up. And then generally what causes these or maintains these. In other words, something has to be maintained by something. In other words, it's the source. So the source of something maintains it. Right? Just like, let's say, from the rain from the, or the water from the mountains and maintains the lake. The lake's not maintaining itself like that. So basically you can say is that our Asat Krishna and our Vidaidarbalya is maintained and cultivated by our offenses and tendency to criticize everybody in the three worlds. Right? Does that make sense? So the Kutinati and the Aparads, that's then what maintains it. So that's why it said if you become humble, you become tolerant, computer, then you can give this up. That'll mean those will go away. Does that make sense? But you have to want them to go away, because you see Krishna removes so much of the anartas. But the core thing of having that desire and cultivating that desire, that you have to give up the desire for that, and then Baladev will take it away. Right? Because it's free will. So why would he take away somebody's mouth? These other things aren't important. You know, like all the junk in the closet, you don't even know is in the closet. You know, you just go in and, you know, when you're not in the house, someone goes in, cleans it all out, throws it away. You don't even know. You just notice, wow, there's a place to put things in the closet, you know. Nice. You know, inside of the heart's clean, you can remember Krishna, and it's great. But why is all that junk in the closet in the first place? Because I want to be the controller and enjoyer. That's what brings this here. So then to give that up, that means then you can shift to the spiritual platform. So that has to be, that's where the choice is. The others is not a necessary choice. You know, okay? Because the others don't affect your free will. You know, does that make sense? If I throw out that old football that's got a hole in it, and you know, because it was quite expensive and this and that, and it was a lot of trouble to get, so you keep it because maybe on the slimmest chance that, you know, how you say, if you found one of those little lamps and a genie came out, then maybe he could fix it for you. Otherwise no one else is going to. So you know, you have it, but then if someone throws it out, is there any loss for you? No. Yeah. So that's the point. But if we lose this choice between do I take up the spiritual or do I maintain my material, that's then our independence. That's the actual independence of the jiva. Everything else, the modes of nature give and take away anyway. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then that's the thing, is that it has to, first has to, it's scriptures and establish what it is. So having that as the basis, and we're firmly fixed in that, then we see everything moves very nicely. So it's a very important thing. We don't want to jeopardize that by not accepting the Shastra, and therefore not accepting the authority and making our own mind the authority. Right? As it is now, our mind is our authority. That's how we've cultivated since time immemorial, but we have to try to switch. Right? So when we have that glimmer of that faith, that dawning, like the creeper, you know, the creeper's delicate, that's when faith starts, and that's when the devotional process starts. Does that make sense? Because what we're talking about is faith in the authority for bhakti. Because otherwise, then faith in the authority for karma and jnana, then you see that that's not what we're talking about. That's pious. That's important. It gives us a religious foundation. But still, religion's not enough. Right? We need sad-dharma, eternal religion, which is service to the Lord. Does that make sense? Yeah? Did that make sense at all, or was that kind of like... Okay. That was that kind of look like a... like when you... read for the final test, you know, and you have a whole book to go through, you know, and you read every third word, so yeah. You said a lot of ands, ifs, buts. You said Shastra a few times. Okay. Okay.
we are not trained to be responsible for our life.
No, because that's the modern thing, is it's all about going against that. Yeah. Like that.
We can thank
the Greeks for that, because they created that relativity aspect, that there's not an absolute standard that you measure everything by. We create our own measurement. You know what I'm saying? So that then you can see is that the Greeks had that very nicely in the philosophy, and when you come to the Romans, they're not known so much for philosophy as they're, you know, good management and organization and those kind of things. You know, anything you can do with that. And then, you know, then through the Dark Ages it didn't go so well, but then when the Renaissance came, you know, it kind of came up a bit with the Age of Enlightenment. That's where then, again, this Greek kind of idea is brought forth in a more modern context. And so then, how you say, in this we can thank the French for that. You know, articulating Maya so well, you know. Making it attractive, you know, again. Otherwise, it had lost its shine. You know, the Dark Ages, that's it. It kind of became dull and like that. So, this principle of accepting the authority, that's then going to, that is the basis of the whole process. That's why then acceptance, you accept, you know, the whole concept, then you accept the devotees, then you accept specifically spiritual master, and then you accept the process given by that, right? Then to become steady at that means I have to give up what I gets in the way of that. So in other words, I have to accept devotional service as the prominent, and I have to give up what's not useful. Does that make sense? So that, changing that identity to servant of Krishna. So if we accept the Shastras, then that gives that basis for that. Because Shastra says everything. So if that is there, then, how you say, Tattva is said to be that which is known by the authority of the Vedas. So when you say Tattva, that means what Vedas explain. And what our mind explains, that's called mental speculation. And it's not that we don't apply the mind to what we've heard from authority. We take tattva we've heard as shabda, then we apply anuman on that tattva, and then we come to pratyaksha, where we can see what the tattva has explained. Then that's realization. So in other words, we hear, that's shravana. So we hear shabda. Then manana means we apply anuman and practice it, you know, use it. Then that will bring us to, nididhyasana, or realization, where then we can see it actually with the senses. It becomes visible for us. It becomes a value. So that's the process. So in other words, it's descending, but it means to descend farther means you have to be more advanced to do that. You know, just like we said, is that the gopis, then this aspect of how Krishna is pervading everything, and everything reminds them of Krishna. It's the highest realization of that whole process. Even though that's technically a lower level thing if you start from there. In other words, it's lower because you're starting backwards. But it's not higher in that it's still, you're going down, you're adding detail. Just like each is there, then there's more detail in Kriya and most detail in Jnana. Because Jnana has to create everything that's there and all the details. And then you're going to work with that as Kriya, and then you're going to get a specific result, and the experience of that is then given to Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's the core. That's the point. It starts there and goes out. So it gets more detail as it goes out. So you have to be more qualified to accept that, but it's not that the detail is more advanced. You know what I'm saying? It's the core that's more advanced. That's the weakness of the modern, is that there's no core. And as you get to more advanced, what's it measured against? Where's the core? So it's not shabda. Because whatever you do today, then tomorrow they'll do something different. Like I mentioned, I was doing homework, and my father looked over my shoulder what I was doing. And he was pointing out 20 years ago when he went to school, it was totally different. So, you know, he wouldn't even know how to help you do your homework, you know. Because it changes. But if you're studying the Vedas, then anybody who study it can teach it. That's why in the Vedic system, then the students are teaching the next generation. On the modernist, you have to go through 12 years of school, then do your undergrad, then do your postgrad and all that, and then you can teach, you know, third grade. Like that. But the point, the Vedic system is, you know, it says, you know, fourth graders can teach third graders. You know, it needs a little more than fifth, sixth. But the point is that, because that's all it takes to know that. But the point is they have to be still studying. So that's the Vedic system. That's how it works. You know, and you see it used a little bit here and there in the modern system. You don't see it lower, but in university you have tutors, which are other students that are just like ahead of you. I think first year you're not a tutor, but the second year I think you can start being a tutor.
Generally now it is like PhD scholars.
Oh, they go down and do. But no, there's a thing where I've heard of where students can help other students. It's part of the process. They're not in control of it. Mm-hmm. But maybe it's changing.
In master's degree, there is some certain number of hours that you have to assist the professor in his like lab work or something like that.
Okay, well that's the thing here, but this is, you're assisting but you're helping others do the work and understand the homework and stuff like that. So in other words, they have a question, they come to you first.
Yes.
Yeah, and then if that doesn't, then it goes to the teacher. Because the point is, the professor, he's giving a lecture. How many students are there, right? Standard seems to be 300. I don't know why it's 300, but, you know, you had more.
Less.
How many?
Postgrads, only 30.
No, I'm talking about undergrads. 30, right? So, and 300. So then that means, can he deal with 300 asking questions? No. Therefore, then there's so many of those, I don't know what they call them, but I heard one devotee said in their university it was tutors, like that. And so then they would take care of that. And then what they couldn't take care of went to the teacher. So that way then one teacher could manage all these. So it's a Vedic system.
And the teachers are also being paid. So it's
only, oh, they earn also. Okay, because they got to put in time.
Some
okay.
Pocket number,
yeah. Okay. Good. Why not? Pays for all those chips, right? In Bombay, I guess it pays for all the water pow. Because right? That's all you eat, right? You don't eat something real, right? And, okay. This has been mentioned in the first canto as tatvam vadati tatvat va vidas tatvam yajgyanad vayam o. I know this verse, but it's all squashed together. I can't tell. It's funny when you know it by, what do you call it? By sight. You know, then unless it's exactly like sometimes we do a different printout for the mantras. And they use a different font or a different size or the layout slightly different. I don't know the mantras. You know, it has to go through it sometime, then you start catching.
That's the word that came here.
Sorry?
It is Vadanti Tattva Tattva
Yajgyanam. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Tattva Yajgyanam Advayam Brahmiti. Yeah, it's like, I think the first verse I learned, but you know, then you'll see, you hear, huh? What a word, my God.
Isn't that the same thing that they change the tune?
Yeah. That's the whole thing. That's what creates the variety. So then you can. Knowledge is truth, which is beyond the gunas, vishuddham. It is supreme, from which arises liberation. In other words, that's knowledge. So when people say they want truth, they want knowledge, they're not talking about, if they're talking beyond the modes, yes, then that is truth and knowledge. If they're not, then that's locally how we call it. We call it truth, though it's not. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like that car you get to go to Krishnagar. We call it a car, but technically it's not. You know. But, yeah. It is supreme, from which arises liberation. Right? So transcendental knowledge will free you from the material entanglement. It is without a second, a come. Right? There isn't any, no other knowledge compares to it. Right? That's why Krishna says, Raja Vidya, Raja Guru, that this is the supreme knowledge. It is devoid in internal, antaram, and external, abalibhi. That means it pervades everywhere. Right? It doesn't have an internal and an external, because that means then you're not everywhere. right? So that's why it says there's no difference between Krishna and his body. It is him. Because if there was a difference, how would he be all pervading? So which is pervading, which one's not?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
In your opinion, is that the material knowledge has internal and external. What does that mean?
It has internal and external. Because it's not all pervading. It deals with a specific aspect, and you have the subtler aspects and you have the grosser aspects. So in other words, in secondary, you have primary and secondary within that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not all pervading.
Mm-hmm.
But what is all pervading is you know what is the principles on which that material knowledge is based, and then you can apply that in another body of knowledge. Right? So that's anuccana. Is being able to see that principle on which all the branches of knowledge connect. And that's Krishna. Right? So the devotee, they actually, when it's said they know everything, technically they do. They just don't know how they know. You know what I'm saying? It's just like I noticed kids in the school, they grow up, they know so much. But because they're always in that environment and everybody's doing it, they think they don't know anything. Because when they go out and, you know, when they bump into people, they talk about some things they don't know. But then when they actually go out and then they see any question anybody ask on, they can answer anything on the deity worship, anything this and that, they can do. They can do all these things that others can't do. Then only they figure out they know something. Like that. But generally they have to go out to figure that out. You know what I mean? So, in the same way as the philosophy that we know, you know everything. We just don't necessarily understand how to apply it in everything. Is that? Yeah? No? Okay. That means it pervades everywhere. This knowledge is also Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Brahman means the impersonal aspect worshipped by the jnanis. It is called Paramatma. Prasantam, worshipped by the yogis. Prasantam means that in which the jiva is extinguished, right? So when they say Paramatma, the worshippers of Paramatma, they're going to merge into Paramatma. Right? Otherwise, why would you call them Paramatma if you're going to do service? It's Bhagavan. You understand? But you understand the aspect of Paramatma. So he's known as Brahman because of the impersonal aspect. But the point is, for the devotees, Krishna being everywhere is not impersonal. He's pervading as the impersonal, but he himself, the person who's doing that. Bhagavan is the aspect worshipped by the devotees. So then that's why you see the other two and connects with Bhagavan, not separately. They say that these three forms are included in Vasudeva, the son of Vasudeva, who is the most complete form. He is called Purnam, Brahma Sanatanam, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.24.32, as Krishnaya Paramatmane, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.6.36, and as Tatastu Bhagavan Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.8.27. In the Gita, he calls himself the basis of Brahman, Brahmanohi Patishtaham, Bhagavad Gita 14.27. He also describes himself as Paramatma. Vishtabhya ham idam kritsna meksha ksham shena stito jagat. Bhagavat 10.42. He also says Vasudevo Bhagavatam. Among the forms of Bhagavan, I am Vasudeva. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.26.29. The word Bhaga in Bhagavan means Aishwarya or lordship. This also implies, right, so that means Bhagavan, he's the person who has all these Aishwaryas and control of all those Aishwaryas. Right? And then that means the Aishwaryas, you know, him being unlimited means they're unlimited. That brings rise to the Brahman aspect. Right? So, in other words, he has lordship over, he has all those energies and lordship of that. That creates the Paramatma aspect. That's where that comes from. That is all pervading, that is the Brahman aspect. But it's the person who has all these and the lordship, but the point is it's not about the lordship and all pervading, that's just what he is. It's about the interaction, the rasa. So that's why that aspect is the highest. Right? But having that aspect, the deeper you're going to that, then the more you start to see all these other aspects, Paramatma and Brahman, in relationship to that person. Right? And it just enhances the personal understanding and appreciation. This also implies, quote, those who are controlled by the Lord, because opulence means his energies, which is controlled by, that means everybody. Right? Since the jivas in Maya are an illusion, as previously described, those controlled by the Lord, end quote, means the devotees in the Lord's abode, because they're actually controlled. And we're not controlled. The word controlled by his external energy, so that's why it's not considered. That's done through his Brahman and Paramatma aspect. Right? Okay, those control means the devotees in the Lord's abode, they are eternal. The devotees in the abode of the Lord are both eternal truth. Like the Lord, they are proved by the statements of Scripture, right? So you could say he's directly controlling by his desire, right? And then they take care. Well, here, his desire is to go back to Godhead, so everything else that's there is a matter of the choice, the nature of the jiva that's carried out by his external energy. So he's not involved in that. Though he's in control of it, but he's not involved. But in the spiritual world, then he's in control, he's involved. Though, depending on where it is, he exhibits less control. The devotees in the abode of the Lord are both eternal truth. Like the Lord, they are proved by the statements of scriptures. This is explained in the first canto and elsewhere. Shraddha mat sevayan tu nirguna. Faith in my devotional service is purely transcendental. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:25-27. Man niketam tu nirgunam. Residence in the place where I reside is transcendental. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:25-25. Anything relating to bhakti is said to be eternal truth as well. So it's related to, you know, according to parampara, then it takes on that same quality. If we speculate and deviate from that, then the part that's deviated is deviated. The other part may be correct, but we have to see the quality of that deviation may contaminate it, so it still doesn't give the proper effect, because we're not using it that way. We're only using it materially. Like sahajas, they may do kirtan and this and that, but they won't get that benefit. You know, they may get some piety from it, but they won't get spiritual benefit, because it's not parampara. You know what I'm saying? You can say, no, but they're chanting, yes, but what they'll get is mundane piety. You know, it's just like, what is the guy, you know, on the street when the kirtan goes by and they go, Hare Krishna, like that. You know, it's not the boss, so it gives something like that, but it won't give prema. So that's the difference. The Shudanam, that would give prema. So when it comes in parampara, it can give prema. But these others, it's not. Does that make sense? So all they can give is material piety. So that's the difference. Even though it looks the same, like the sahajiyas or the smartas, they may be doing exactly the same activities, but they're not. The results aren't the same. One gets piety, the other gets bhakti. Means Vaishnavas get bhakti, and the other two groups outside of that, they can simply get piety. But, so the smart is following, he's getting the piety, and he's avoiding what's sinful. But the sahajas, they may be doing pious activities, but they're also doing sinful activities, so they get both. So, that makes sense, yeah. The intention of this section is as follows. O King, you have spoken of the material world, made of Maya, proven by the senses, which has transformations which are eternal, sometimes visible and invisible. You must accept, right, which has transformations which are eternal, means the primary creation has all the formulas for all the transformations that the material energy can make. That's eternal. So it's not that, oh, at this age it's different, so it doesn't fall. No, it's the same laws. That's all. You know, they before creation, before Brahma's creation, these laws are already made. They still apply today. They're going to apply, you know, for eternity. It won't change. You must accept the temporary nature of these material things, since they are limited by time and space, according to your own opinion. But since spiritual objects are not limited by time and space, being completely different, they are not part of the material conventional world. You repeatedly talk of the conventional world. Other philosophers say this conventional world is false. This view has also been stated. However, even these persons do not object to the conclusion of the scriptures stated in the present verse. It has been said that bhakti means engaging the senses and body for Krishna. The Lord has said that bhakti is beyond the gunas. Lakshanam bhakti yogasya nirgunasya hyudahritam. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:29-12. This can be true in Parinamavad, right? Because the energies are transforming. That's why he has, Bhagavan is Aishwarya, so he has lordship. So in that, then there, under his control, they are transforming. So when you accept the Parinamavad, you know, Shakti Parinamavad, it works. Where the effects are stated to be real. I can understand very well. So the real energy is transforming, and the transformations are real because of the cause and effect principle. But the difference is that we attribute different nature to what's been transformed. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the whole thing. I can understand very well that the material body and senses become spiritual by contact with bhakti, which is like a touchstone. In Vivartavad, however, the effects are said to be unreal. Therefore, the body and senses are unreal. So for them, everything's unreal. But it also means what they're thinking, what they're saying, what they're doing is also unreal. So there's no point in them doing it. So why are they doing it? It just makes them happy, which is a material thing. So therefore, how has that got anything to do with philosophy? So by their philosophy, you can't actually even have a philosophy or a practice or a goal or anything. It's self-defeating. You know, that's what we see with all these. If you understand, they're all self-defeating.
You know? Because everything is unreal, they're not able to even prove their own philosophy.
Yes. Yeah, they can't prove their own philosophy because it's unreal. So, yes.
The other day I was reading some yoga where it says that Krishna's energy, bhakti, and his dhyan, yoga, and tantra, those are all Krishna's energy.
Yes, everything's Krishna's energy.
So this energy, particular energy, bhakti, he has got a form.
Well, you say Bhakti Devi. Yeah, but it's not necessarily that she's Bhakti Devi. You know, like you say Ganga Jamuna Ki Jai, you know, it's not that they have particular forms, but specifically what that form is, that I can't exactly say, because it's a combination between Chit and Hladini. You know, Samvit and Ladini, that's bhakti. Like that, that's explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That when the activities, the, you know, Samvit are engaged in Ladini, that combination is bhakti. Right? And then from that, Sandini then reveals, you know, the Lord's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. The point is, Radharani is everything also, as Krishna is, just as he's everything through his energy, she is that energy that is him through everything. So the point is that we don't have to really worry about. We understand the nature of bhakti and we're happy with that. Does that make sense? Yeah. She is the total energy, but she is taking that position of Hladini. So bhakti is serving her. Just like bhakti is serving Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. In other words, don't get too caught up on the time and space of it. Yes. Yes.
Yes. it also seems that it gives some bias in that, but not so much the devotional
service. It depends. Means if you're talking about the, you know, the vast majority of those from about 25 kilometers east of, or let's say from the border of, what do you call it? The border of Burma over to the border of Afghanistan, and from the Kanyakumari up to China. Then you could say yes. But if you're talking about those within the, you know, within the society, within ISKCON, then they're within the parampara. It's just that they don't have the qualifications in that area. So that means they're using it seriously as a process is not actually the position. Does that make sense? Yeah?
What gives?
Well, it gives some other result. Well, the results all dependent on what's their desire. Because Krishna reciprocates according to desire. So the idea is that when you get second initiated, ideally then you're on the Madhyama platform, so then it should be functioning in pure devotional service. So then what you, in worshipping the deity, then you're gaining from that, you're progressing in the pure devotional service. You know what I'm saying? Well, if we approach that before that, then we may be more absorbed in karma and jnana. And so it's not that by worshiping the deity we're getting getting these two, and that's all. No, we're getting the bhakti, but there may be a prominence of those. So then it won't be as pleasing to the Lord, right? For that direct dealing. Now coming, offering prayers, doing all that. That's the point. Is everybody's worshiping the deities. Like in Mayapur, everyone worshiping Radha Madhava. So even their home deities are expanded from them. You know, if you're a local resident, you come from someone else, but your deities, they may be expanding from the, you know, whatever's the main deities there. You know what I'm saying? But the idea is that you won't get the full benefits like that. That's why it's generally restricted, because the Bhagavat platform doesn't have any rules on it. Anybody can chant Hare Krishna and like that, as long as you've heard it from those who are chanting, right? The proper chanting. But when you get to Pancharatra, then there's rules, you know, and then you have to follow those rules to make it work. There's a mechanical aspect of stuff. Then when you get down to the Vedic, it's even more mechanical. But the point is the devotees see both of those in line with Bhagavan, serving Krishna. Mm-hmm. So there's no problem. Okay? Therefore, the body and senses, okay. Okay. In Vivartavad, however, the effects are said to be unreal. Therefore, the body and senses are unreal. Right? That's there. So for them, bhakti therefore has no foundation. How can it be said to be beyond the gunas, right? So when you say bhakti is beyond the gunas, then, and you say that the body and all that is within the gunas, and so anything done with that must be material, so bhakti being beyond, then it can't be supported by Vivartavad. It can only be supported by Parinamavad. Mm-hmm. Right? So the point is Krishna being in control of his energies, therefore then you can be involved in serving the Lord through his energies. Then that's called bhakti. But if you don't, then you're not serving the Lord through his energies. You're using it as a piety. Then, you know, it's not bhakti. It may look like bhakti, therefore there's some bhakti included. But you say something's what it is by what the end result you'll get. Does that make sense? Like that. Yeah. So, right? He's just like, let's say, a chef. Why is he called a chef? What's the end result of a chef?
Food.
Cooked food. You know, nice presentation, you know, the whole package. Now, if you say you have a kitchen assistant, what's the end result? You have facility for the cook to use. Right? Does that make sense? So you can only call it bhakti when its end result is bhakti. If you're using bhakti and the end result's not bhakti, you don't call it bhakti, even though it's using bhakti. Right? The karmi and jnani may use bhakti because that's the only thing that works. But once they get the result they want, the secondary result, then for them that's all they want. They drop the use of bhakti. So it's not about bhakti. So we don't call it bhakti. That's the point. The secondary aspects of the Vedic culture are used by everybody. In other words, religion is used by everybody in the Vedic system. That's what makes them human. That's the common ground. Now, whether they want to use that religion for karma, jnana, or bhakti, that makes a difference whether they're called karmis, jnanis, or bhaktis. Is that what you mean?
On that same logic then, if the end result is bhakti, it doesn't matter which means we use. Bharma, jnana, mixture of both?
No, but the thing is what you use is just like... Could we say, okay, since the process, I mean, by this cooking process, we want to end up with some baked potatoes. So that would mean we could use any process we wanted or any ingredient we wanted to get that. Is that true? Could we start off with a pumpkin and end up in baked potatoes? You understand? So it may be that, okay, we don't have this really nice oven, so we use a cheaper oven. Or I remember when in the 70s that the Didi cooks, when they cooked the cake for Radha Madhava, they had this, it was kind of like this tin box with a door on the front. And the bottom was hollow, you know, I mean, it was open. And you put that on the gas burner. And that heated, that was the oven. And so somehow or other they could cook incredibly in that. That took some great talent. So that's the meaning of you. Or you have nothing else, you just take the potatoes and have the fires kind of dry. You have good coals, you move the coals, put them inside like that, and then come back after. And then, you know what I'm saying? So that's the meaning of you could use anything. So that means whether you use Shravanam, Kirtanam, you know, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Dasyabandhanam, Sakyamatmani, Vedanam, like this, that you can use any process. But you can't change what you're using. Because when you say karma or jnana, that means it's not bhakti. And bhakti means you're engaging knowledge and activities in the Lord's service. Does that make sense? So that's the part that's there. The karma and jnana that are there are just latched onto it. You know, it's like a leech. You know, the fish goes places, but this leech is going along with it. You know, so at some point, then, you know, you have to drop the leech. Is that... Okay. When the guru at the time of teaching says, I will now teach about nirguna bhakti, the person taught is non-existent. How can the guru teach? Right? He doesn't exist, you don't exist, the process of bhakti doesn't exist, so, and teaching doesn't exist, so what's the meaning of? How can the guru teach? It is like sowing seeds in the sky. How can Krishna bhakti exist? Moreover, how can prema arise through practice? Right? Because you're dealing with nothing, and from nothing you'll get nothing. So, right? Moreover, how can the Lord be controlled by prema if it's nothing? Right? And he's nothing, you know, like that. So that's the whole problem. For the Lord with inconceivable powers, nothing is impossible. The Lord himself has said, this process is the supreme intelligence of the intelligent and the cleverness of the most clever. For by following it, one can in this very life make use of the temporary and unreal to achieve me, the eternal reality. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:29-22. So So you're taking intelligence, the intelligent and the intelligent. That means you can analyze. The clever means you can apply. Because you don't call a nerd clever. Because clever means something's accomplished. It means in the area they do, you can say within that they're there, but let's just say socially, it's not clever. You understand? I'm just trying to bring out, or an academic, you don't say they're clever. Right? But there may be a very active student and they accomplish something in a very unique way. That's clever. Does that make sense? So all we're doing is just showing the difference here between intelligence and cleverness. So intelligence means the capacity to analyze. And cleverness means the capacity to intelligently apply. So they're both intelligence. Does that make sense? So much of the time you see, just as a side thing, the men, they focus more on the analytical and the women more on the cleverness. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, like that. So that's the whole thing, is that they're the most intelligent, most clever, because they make use in this very life, means in that one lifetime, because the question the other day is, does it mention what it says? So here's another one that mentions, in this very life. So when you say in this very life, means you accomplish in this very life. That's the phrasing, you know, how you say. And to make use of the temporary and unreal to achieve me, the eternal reality. Right? So that's the perfection. That's the whole thing. So therefore, the material world then has to have that connection. It has to be connected to him. So that you can't have this aspect where it's not part, that it's, Vivartabad won't explain this. Parinamabad will. Because then you're having the person with opulences, those can transform into the material, therefore, because they are non-different from him, and because the causes and the effect, therefore we can find the aspect of Krishna there in what we're using, use that in bhakti towards him, and it gives us the eternal result. Yes?
So there is actually a major flaw in their logic. They say everything is unreal, then they don't say what is real.
They say Brahman is real, but the point is then how do they explain everything, and everything's Brahman. So it sounds like they have one aspect, but the point is that because they don't know Paramatma and Bhagavan, they don't actually understand. And because they're not accepting Brahman as, they say Brahman is everything, but they're not accepting it as everything, right? So they claim to be that they're monists, exclusive monists, but actually they're exclusive dualists, because there's Brahman and then there's illusion. You know, so you can see here's where you get your basis of, you have God and you have the devil, right? And he can't control. So this is not within that control. If Brahman is there, that means Brahman everything. It means everything's under control of Brahman. Then you'll say, oh, Brahman has no qualities. So then why do you say it's eternal and untransformable? Those are qualities. So you see, there's many difficulties that they have. So they don't discuss these.
Yeah.
They won't. It means that you can bring them up, then they'll have to address them. And that's why their philosophy keeps changing. Because it started with Brahma Parinamavad, because Brahman's everything. And because they want to, you know, be everything and this and that, it works for them. But when the faults pointed out, you know, in Ramanujacharya and them come, then they have to start changing. You know, so then it goes from Brahman being, then into the Maya being, and then now I think they take the Jiva as the crux, you know, like that, so. You know, the one about, you know, it's somebody's dream. And all of us are illusion except there's one. So then it gets weirder and weirder as time goes. And so. Yeah?
Shankaracharya,
he propounded the Vivarta philosophy. In Vivarta, but it's Brahma Parinamavad. It's illusion, but what we're saying is, where are you emphasizing?
Yeah, that's right. I was thinking, like, who's the person who
did
this category?
Means your Brahma Parinamavad, that's there originally. It means the impersonalism already there in India. And it already doesn't have a problem, like we see Sukadev Goswami. They don't have a problem that the world's unreal. Mm-hmm. It means our conception of it's unreal, but it exists. But it's all Brahman, so it doesn't matter whether it's a coconut tree or a road. But the point is you can walk on a road, you can't walk through a coconut tree. Right? If it's a sequoia and they built a road through it, then you can walk through it, but that only happens in, you know, central California. So that's not going to work over here. So, you know, say, so you go around the trees. Yeah? So it's already there. So then he brought in the Buddhist philosophy. But so what's going to be the closest to it is going to be this. But he just puts he has to put the Buddhist spin on it. So that's where it starts to become bogus. You know, because for the Brahmavadis, then they, what they're understanding is truth, but it's not whole. There's more to it. There's Paramatma and Bhagavan. Right? So they're missing that. So it doesn't get explained properly. But what's going on nowadays, if people talk, that's just Mayavad. Because they're getting it all from Shankara. So the details of that, that's another study. The meaning is this. This is intelligence, because yat, by the mortal body, which is false, one attains the supreme truth, ritam. Or one attains me, ma, the form of the highest bliss, amritam. Anritena, martyena, can also refer to anything subject to destruction. The body, senses, prana, leaves, flowers, incense, fragrance, lamps, food, umbrella, and chamara. That one achieves me by these items is intelligence. Among those with intelligence. This is the conclusion among the most elevated wise men. So you're taking all these things of worshiping the Lord with the body, with the life airs, with the paraphernalia, and you're attaining the supreme, even though all these things that you're using are temporary. So the point is to keep us on that proper understanding. That's why then we follow recommended paths and we avoid what's not recommended, because the non-recommended have a tendency to distract. So that's why it's not recommended. Yeah. The method of attaining bhakti is explained by the Lord. A person who gives up all karmas and offers himself entirely to Guru, whom I desire to make special, achieves freedom from death, and more important, is qualified to be an associate of mine in prema. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:29-34. Yes, so here we see is interesting just down here is that the person who gives up all karmas and offers themselves entirely to Guru, whom I desire to make special. So Krishna desires to make the Guru special. So we in our contemporary, you know, mindset may not appreciate that by, you know, whatever philosophies and social philosophies we have. But the point is, it's Krishna that wants to make him important. You know? And so therefore, then that's how the culture works. But it's because they're representing Krishna in this thing. So, therefore, that's why when you give up everything, surrender to Guru, and follow the order of Guru, which is to use everything in the Lord's service, that's when you come to the transcendental platform. Then you can be an associate of. He's qualified to be an associate of mine in prema. So that's he's not saying they're qualified to be an associate that hangs around the edges. No, in prema. So he brings it to the topmost platform. Yes. Yes. But go to the spiritual world, but to take part in his pastimes in prema. So it's taking it beyond bhava. So in other words, that surrender to Guru, where the Guru, you know, one follows the instruction of the Guru. And because there's, you know, that specialness of Guru. That's what Prabhupada said. Was it that first initiation? Prabhupada initiated the devotees and like that. What is, and they asked, well, Prabhupada, what is the significance of initiation? And he said, you accept the Guru as good as God. And it's kind of like, what? You've just been telling us that Guru's not God, and now you're saying, you know, what's happened here? Did we get tricked? You know, so Prabhupada had to explain, as good as he represents, so therefore you have to see there. So that specialness, that's the uniqueness that must be seen. Because if Guru is special, that makes Krishna special. He's representing Krishna. If Guru is just an ordinary schmo, then what does that make Krishna? Yeah. An even bigger schmo, right? Yeah. So we want to avoid that. That's not how we work.
Guru should have golden car.
Sorry?
Guru should have golden car, as Prabhupada said.
Yeah. That's another thing. Means he was saying that what you owe Guru, even if you say they were complaining, I think the article is about, you know, Hare Krishna Guru rolls in, you know, huh? And rolls meaning not R-O-R-O-L-L-S, but R-O, how you say it? I can't even remember how you spell it. Rolls as in Rolls Royce.
S-E.
S-E, yeah.
R-O-L-C.
R-O-L-S-E.
R-O-L-C-E.
R-O-L.
C-E.
C-E. Okay. So that's the Royce. Isn't that your, I think you're mixing the two. Because you have to get rolls, but whatever it is, they mixed it up. So the whole they made a word play on it. But then asking about that, Prabhupada says, "What you owe that, you know, even if they roll that car was solid gold, it still wouldn't have any real meaning." And then Prabhupada said that when he was in Hong Kong, one gentleman there had put Prabhupada up in the Hilton Hotel, which at the time was the best hotel. So he was in the penthouse suite, and he said, top suite, you know, this stuff takes the whole place. And so a reporter asked about that. He said, even if the whole hotel was made of solid gold, and that was the 26th floor, so that's a lot bigger than the Rolls. He said, it still wouldn't compare. Mm-hmm. So the whole point is that's what you offer. It's not that's what he demands. His problem, you see, he was just staying in the apartment with everybody else and using the same bathroom. Probably had to stay in line with everybody else to use the bathroom. It's not that they gave him preference. No, it's first come, first serve. Probably came, you know, 5 minutes later, so he's, you know, fifth to go to the bathroom. You know, that's the way it goes. You know. It took him a while to figure that one out.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Anitai Gaura Premanandini. You seem to be missing.